In the previous verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that I'll accept the role of a devotee and I'll teach devotional service by practicing it myself. Srila Prabhupada often refers to this, that in Krishna said, Sarva Dharman Pratyaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, just surrender. But the misguided living entities didn't surrender. And so Krishna himself took the role of a devotee to teach how to surrender. Prabhupada gives the example that the teacher tells the student, now write A, now write B. But if the student doesn't get it, then the teacher himself picks up the chalk, A, B. So by doing it himself, he teaches. So in the same way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught devotional service by his practical example. And here, apana na koile dharma shikana niyoi. If we don't practice, then what's the use of preaching? If one practices devotional service himself, then he can spread it to others. Otherwise, we're urging people, please chant Hare Krishna. Do you chant Hare Krishna? No. Please read these books. Do you read them? Well. So one has to preach. They say example speaks louder than precept. So one has to do the thing himself. I gave a story one time. I was at Kennedy Airport in New York City. I was on my way to India, I guess. And so I wanted to cash some traveler's checks or turn some cash into traveler's checks. Traveler's checks were the forerunners of credit cards and so on. Now no one uses them those days. So anyway, the girl's making the checks for me, and like a true New Yorker, she says, here you go, hon. That's affectionate diminutive for honey, which is how you address nice people in New York sometimes. She says, here you go, hon. I really like you people. You're not like the other groups. You're really what you pretend to be. Here you go. So we have to be what we pretend to be. If we're teaching devotional service, then we should be practicing devotional service so that the message and what we actually do will be consistent and the potency will be there. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangsthapanartaya sampavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. Purport. Texts 22 and 23 were spoken by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, 4, 7 through 8. Texts 24 and 25, which follow, are also from the Bhagavad Gita, 3, 24 and 21. Utside yurime loka nakuryam karma chedaham sankarasya chakartasyam upahanyam ima prajaha. If I did not show the proper principles of religion, all these worlds would fall into ruin. I would be the cause of unwanted population and would spoil all these living beings. Those of you who've memorized the English for this verse will notice that the translation is different. Srila Prabhupada typically did that. He didn't always translate the verse the same way. And if it did come out the same way, half the time it's because the editors just made it the same way. But Prabhupada would retranslate So the wording here is slightly different, although the message is the same. If I didn't follow strictly the proper principles of religion, then the whole world would fall into ruination. I'd be called Sankarasya Chakartasya. When irreligion is prominent, adharma bibhavat krishna pradushyanti kulastriya. Stri shudar tushta shubarshneya jayate varnasankara. When religious principles aren't followed, then people will have illicit sex. And the result of illicit sex will be unwanted pregnancy. And the result of unwanted pregnancy is that the world will become hellish. Shankro narakasyaiva. And we're actually seeing that. No one gives a damn about religious principles. And so people have sex like cats and dogs. And then they have unwanted pregnancies for which the solution is either to kill the child or abandon it. We see, I was flying out of England a while back, and there was some front page article, the guy next to me was reading, how some babies had been discovered in a landfill. Bodies of young children had been discovered in a landfill in plastic bags. It means that the mothers had disposed of, or somebody had disposed of these children by putting them into the system, essentially. And so they'd turned up in the landfill. And the comment from the landfill people was that actually there's more, but we can't, you know, we can't scan all the garbage looking for bones, but there's more. You've just happened to find these two children, but there's a lot more where they came from. So that's how it is in Kali Yuga. We forget religious principles. We have sex because we want to have sex, and then if we get pregnant, then there's abortion or abandoning children. Or actually killing them. Probably they don't just kill them except by abortion, but just abandon them and let nature take its course. Or the children grow up, you know, with no father or no mother or no either. And then what kind of life do they have? Disturbed, upajutaha, often criminal. So they make the world hellish. So it's not just theoretically that Krishna is speaking here, but if people don't follow religious principles, the world becomes hellish by this process. Irreligion, then illicit sex, then unwanted children, and then either ghastly abortions and abandonments and murders, or else kids growing up all screwed up because they don't have proper grounding in family life. Now Krishna says, if I didn't show the example, then that's what would happen. I don't have any duties to perform. Name partasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana. In the whole three worlds, there's no duty that I have to do. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Where's the question of prescribed duty for me? But for the benefit of teaching others, for the sake of teaching others, I follow these regulative principles. Yad yad acharati sheshtas tad tadevetaro janaha. Sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Whatever actions a great man performs, common people follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So Krishna argues that even if you think you don't need to perform prescribed duties, you should do it to set the example for others. Even if you're on the transcendental platform on which there's no duty anymore because you're beyond material considerations, still, for the sake of others, you should follow prescribed duties. The Goswamis. It's said about Sanatana Goswami that his following of the regulative principles was so strict that his sadhana was like a line engraved in stone. And that's Sanatan Goswami. He's on the highest Paramahansa platform. He's beyond. He's hanging his deity in a tree. And when the deity is complaining that you're only giving me these bhati, just balls of dough thrown in the fire, and there's not even any salt on them, for crying out loud. And then he tells the deity, listen, I'm doing what I can. I'm an old man. Please take what I'm giving you. So he's on that platform where he can have such exchanges with Krishna. But he's strictly following the regulative principles to set the example for others. Sankyapurva kanamagana natibhi kala vasanikrito. Chanting so many rounds, following vows, circumambulating governments, all of these things to set the example. Because if we don't set the example, what will the others do? So this begins with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He sets the example of performing devotional service. Krishna himself, he follows the example. He accepts a spiritual master, Shandipani Muni. What does he need a spiritual master for? He's the guru of everyone. Bande Krishna Jagat Guru. But just to set the example, Krishna accepts a spiritual master. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts a spiritual master. And they follow the regulative principles. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, Kaviraj Goswami is citing these verses from Bhagavad Gita. And even Krishna, he cites that even kings like Janaka, the father-in-law of Ramchandra, he followed the regulative principles just to set the example. So Krishna urges Arjuna, you should also do that. And we should also do that. Yuga dharma pravartan hoy angshohaite atma bina anye nare braja prema dite. My plenary portions can establish the principles of religion for each age. No one but me, however, can bestow the kind of loving service performed by the residents of Vraja. There are different avatars of the Lord, and they can do this, dharma samsthapana, establishing the principles of dharma, and parachanaya sadhunam vinashaya. They can do these things. But to spread Krishna prema, for that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considers, who else can do this? I'll come personally and do this. The kind of devotional service performed by the Prajvasis, that's not such an easy thing. Well, I'll come and distribute that. Santvavatara bhava pankajanabhasya sarvato bhadraha krishnaranyako va latas vapi premando bhavati. There may be many all auspicious incarnations of the personality of Godhead, but who other than Lord Sri Krishna can bestow love of Godhead upon the surrendered souls? This quotation from the writings of Bilva Mangala Thakur is found in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita 1.5.37. Tahate apanna bhakta gan kari shange prithivite avatari karimu nana range. Therefore, in the company of my devotees, I shall appear on earth and perform various colorful pastimes, nana range. Eta bhavi kali kale pratama sandhyai avatirna hoila krishna apani nadiyai. Thinking thus, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself, descended at Nadiya early in the age of Kali. Purport. The pratam sandhyai is the beginning of the age. According to astronomical calculation, the age is divided into 12 parts. The first of these 12 divisions is known as the Pratam Sandhya. The Pratam Sandhya and Shesha Sandhya, the last division of the preceding age, form the junction of the two ages. According to the Surya Siddhanta, the Pratam Sandhya of Kali Yuga lasts 36,000 solar years. Lord Chaitanya appeared in the Pratam Sandhya after 4,586 solar years of Kali Yuga had passed. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Krishna's only sometimes extraordinarily transgresses religious principles. Otherwise, he follows. In his householder life at Dwarka, he strictly followed regulative principles. As a brahmachari, he strictly followed the principles for brahmachari life. When he went to Mathura, he saw to the welfare of his parents and following religious principles. So generally Krishna follows. Well, he doesn't have to, they're his principles. But generally he respects the principles of Vedic injunction. But sometimes he oversteps them also for the sake of exchanging the devotional service offered by his devotees. That's a higher principle for Krishna than the rules and regulations of mundane moral life. But what is that? Tejiyasam nadoshaya. For the powerful persons, these are not faults. Bhagavatam says. Lord Shiva drinks poison. Now, what kind of example is that? You know, all these kids, you know, now they're going to follow Lord Shiva and start drinking poison. Very bad example. We're going through so much trouble, we're putting, you know, horrible-looking faces on medicines so that the kids will look at it and say, yuck. You know, kids shouldn't accidentally take these poisonous things. And here's Lord Shiva deliberately drinking poison. And if that's not bad enough, he smokes hash. He's a hashish smoker. And if that's not bad enough, he doesn't follow the standard dress code. And he wears weeds and skulls and ashes. Now, what kind of example is that for the youth of Britain, I ask you? No. But these are the privileges of those who are in an exalted position. They can do things that ordinary people can't do, and for them it's all right. If we drink even a tiny bit of poison, finished. And Lord Shiva drinks an ocean of poison. And all that happens is his throat turns blue. So why? Because he's super powerful. Prabhupada gives the example that the sun drinks urine. Because it shines on the place where people pass urine and absorbs it. So, but the sun doesn't become contaminated. Rather, the place becomes purified, becomes antiseptic. Because the sun is powerful. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami says, one shouldn't imitate the great controllers. And one should follow their words of instruction. One should know when they're setting the example and when they're doing something extraordinary. Krishna dances with the gopis, but he lifts Govardhan Hill. So when you can follow that example, when you can lift Govardhan Hill, then you can dance with the gopis too. But people want to dance with gopis, but they don't want to do the other things. They don't have the power, but they want to act like those who have power. So one has to have discrimination. Okay? Yes? Leading, yeah. But to really put it out there, that's Krishna's business or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's business. The other incarnations can teach what are the rules and regulations, how to come to the transcendental platform, how to cultivate devotional service. But this ecstatic love for Krishna, Krishna Prema, as taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the avatars can't or don't do that. How do you develop the strength and ability to follow the example? By following the example. Prabhupada, by following the instructions. You know, how the example is like extraordinary. How could I be like that? You're like that by following. You know, your teacher is playing fantastic mridanga. You can't imitate that. But if you learn the beats and you practice Gita, ta, Gita, ta, Gita, ta, and you go on, and then one day you may turn out to be a wonderful mridanga player also. But you can't do it by just directly imitating, you know, the way he sits, the way you can make a show, but it's not going to be the same. You have to do the work. You have to follow the instructions, get the blessings of your teacher. And then you may also become. Something else? Okay. I promised some cool editorial stuff, so here's some cool editorial stuff. This is something I discovered. Rather happy to discover, to tell you the truth. Concerning rascal editors. How many of you have heard of rascal editors? No, only not more than that? You haven't heard about rascal editors? Oh, 50% of your life is wasted. There's a conversation that Srila Prabhupada had in 1977, I believe. Yeah, June 22nd, 1977, in Vrindavan, which became famous as the Rascal Editors Conversation. This was a discussion in the morning. And it's been cited many times, probably gives some very relevant instructions here about editors who are rascals, because they're puffed up and they think that they can change the words of the spiritual master. They don't know what they're doing, and they're just causing trouble. Dangerous, in fact. So what the part that I just found out about, just by looking again, is that what people think... it all started with an error that Prabhupada found. And, well, rather than explain it, I'll just get you into it. Tamal Krishna Maharaj is there, and Prabhupada says... Find this verse. Munya sadhu prishto hum. That's 1.2.5 Bhagavatam. Find this verse. Munya sadhu prishto hum. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, there's no index. It's not a new Bhagavatam. The old Bhagavatams apparently didn't have the index. It's not a new Bhagavatam. There's no index in this Bhagavatam. Munya sadhu, the effects of Kali Yuga chapter. Is that the verse about the effects of Kali Yuga? No. and there's some background talking, and then people are looking for the verse, then they find it. Muniya sadhu prishto ham pavadbir lokamangalam yat krita krishna samprashno yenatma supersediti. Muniyaha, of the sages, sadhu, this is relevant. Prishtaha, questioned. Aham, Prabhupada, no. What is that? Sadhu, what is that? Muniyaha? Tamal Krishna says, sadhu, this is relevant. Prabhupada, relevant? Tamal Krishna, that's what it's translated as. This is relevant. Maybe a mistake. Devotee one, it's a mistake. Prabhupada, Muniyaha? Tamal Krishna, Muniyaha, of the sages, sadhu, this is relevant. Prabhupada, the nonsense they are correcting my trans rascal. Who has done this? Rascal, who has done this? Muniha is addressing all these munis. Tamal Krishna is addressing the munis? Prabhupada, yes. Tamal Krishna, sadhus, great sages. Prabhupada, yes. Sadhu means they are very pure. What can be done if it goes there and these rascals become Sanskrit scholars and do everything nonsense? One Sanskrit scholar strayed, that rascal. He takes, what is his? Sachi Sutta, Sachi Nandan, Tamal Krishna, Jai Sachi Nandan, Prabhupada. And they are maintaining them, different meaning. So, question, what was the mistake? Prabhupada pointed out a mistake. What was the mistake? Translation of sadhu. How is it translated? This is relevant. And what was the mistake? Supposed to be sages, pure. Okay? That's what people have thought for about 30 years. People have read this conversation and they've concluded that this was a mistake, that it said sadhu, this is relevant, and it should have said sages. Sadhu is a sage, yeah? Tamal Krishna Maharaj says that. Sadhus, great sages. But that's not actually the mistake. Shall we read it again? And then we'll read further. Prabhupada says, what is that? Sadhu, what is that? Muniyaha? Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Sadhu, this is relevant. Prabhupada, relevant? That's what it's translated as. This is relevant. Maybe a mistake. Devotee one, it's a mistake. Who says that sadhu is a mistake? Devotee one and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. They're the ones who say, maybe it's a mistake. It is a mistake. Prabhupada never says sadhava is a mistake. This is relevant is a mistake. Okay, right? Okay, we'll keep going. Then Prabhupada says, Muniyaha, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Muniyaha, of the sages, sadhu, this is relevant. Prabhupada, the nonsense they are. They are correcting my trends. Rascal. Who has done this? Muniyaha is addressing all these munis. Muniyaha is addressing all these munis. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, it's addressing the munis? Prabhupada, yes. Tamal Krishna, sadhus, great sages. Who suggests that sadhu should be translated great sages? Tamal Krishna Maharaj, not Prabhupada. And understandably, you know, what's a sadhu? Come on, you've all been around. What's a sadhu? A great sage. It's usually a guy with a beard and, some kind of like raggy clothing, or those very colorful people in Vrindavan all dressed up in weird ways with peacock feathers or whatever and chandan all over themselves, and or the guys who are sitting by the side of the road in Govardhan smoking a little something and collecting money. You know, India's full of basically hippies. The original hippies are there in India, called sadhus. Some of them are just really hippies, and some of them are very serious practitioners of spiritual life. You find them, you know, in the Himalayas or other places doing, or in Vrindavan, doing serious bhajan. But sadhus, they're people who've left the world and they're doing some sort of spiritual or quasi-spiritual or pseudo-spiritual practice. These are sadhus. Everybody's familiar with the term. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, sadhus, great sages. And Prabhupada says, yes, sadhu means they are very pure. What can be done if it goes there and these rascals become Sanskrit scholars and do everything nonsense? One Sanskrit scholar strayed, that rascal, what is his Sachi Sutta, Sachi Sanandana, Jai Sachinandana? It wasn't Jai Sachinandana, it was someone else. Prabhupada. And they are maintaining them. Different meaning. Tamal Krishna, Bhavadbi, by all of you, Loka, the world, Mangalam, welfare, Yat, because, Kritaha, made, Krishna, the personality of Godhead, Samprashnaha, relevant question, Yena, by which, Atma, self, Supersedity, completely pleased. Translation, O sages, Prabhupada. Now here is, O sages. And the word meaning is, of the munis. Just see, such a rascal Sanskrit scholar. Here it is addressed, Sambodhana, and they touch it, Muniya, of the munis. It is very risky to give them for editorial direction. Little learning is dangerous. However proper Sanskrit scholar, little learning, dangerous. Immediately they become very big scholars, high salaried, and write all nonsense. Who are they? Who they are? What was the mistake? Excuse me? Exactly. That O Munis is supposed to be vocative, and they've translated it genitive. That's grammar speak. In grammar speak, when you address someone, hey, buddy, or oh, sir, that's called vocative case. And when you're talking about something belonging to someone, the money of the treasure of the company, or the arm of the law, or whatever of possession, then it's genitive case. That's called genitive case, showing possession. So, of the sages. Muniha, of the sages. Genitive. And Prabhupada, what does Prabhupada say? Muniha, who has done this? Muniha is addressing all these munis. Addressing means vocative. Who has done this? Now here is, O sages, in the translation. And the word meaning is, of the Munis. So Prabhupada's pointing out the contradiction in the translation. It's vocative, O Munis. And in the word for word, it's genitive, of the Munis. Who has done this? Who is the rascal? Such a rascal Sanskrit scholar. Here it is addressed, Sambodhana, and they make it Munia, of the Munis. Okay, what does Sambodhana mean? Yeah? Sorry? Sambodhana means the first? No. That's Pratam. Back in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sambodhana. I thought you were going to make a different guess. Sambodhana? Does someone know? Sometimes Sambodhana can mean the awakening of knowledge, you know, buddhi, Sambodhana. But here, the appropriate meaning, and I'm taking it from the dictionary, is pertaining to the vocative case. Pertaining to the vocative case. So Prabhupada says, now here it is, O sages, and the word meaning is of the Munis. Just see, such a rascal Sanskrit scholar. Here it is addressed, Sambodhana, and they make it Muniha, of the Munis. That's the mistake. That's the mistake that Prabhupada pointed out. And for the last 30 years, devotees, starting from day one, devotees thought that the mistake was sadhu, this is relevant. It should have been sadhus, O sages. And they're wrong. That's not what it says, and it's not what Prabhupada said it should say. And when you look in the commentaries, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they say that Muniha means, hey Muniha, O Munis, and sadhava means good. Your questions are good. They're righteous. They're praiseworthy questions. That's another meaning of sadhu. Just to the point. When something is good, when something is righteous, just like sometimes, when something's just to the point, when it's righteous, when it's, we say, right on, sadhu, right. It comes from the actual first meaning of sadhu, root meaning is straight. So the sadhus are the people who are straight, not, you know, now sadhus are the crookedest people in the world, but sadhu is supposed to be a person who's straight, who's you know, spiritually up there. And it also means, in context, righteous, proper, right, or as Prabhupada translates it here, relevant. Relevant. So even this, in the last couple of weeks, one of my godbrothers has posted again, this rascal editor conversation. And he's asked, and he's quoted the most recent version of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which it still says, this is relevant. And so he's essentially asking, what is with these rascal editors? Prabhupada clearly said this was wrong, and they're still not fixing it. Rascals. But if you look in the Bhagavatam, it does say, O Munis, O sages, in the word for word. And Prabhupada's original was, if you look in the Indian Bhagavatam, O the sages, O spelled O-H, O the sages. So probably some rascal editor or rascal typist or maybe rascal Jaitwaita, whatever, one of us rascals, changed O the sages to of the sages. And then after Prabhupada brought it up, we changed it to O sages. And for the last 30 years, it's been right. O sages. But for the last 30 years, more than 30 years, some devotees, probably most devotees who've studied this conversation, have thought wrongly that the mistake was sadhava. This is relevant. How could it be this is relevant? Sadhu, everybody knows sadhu means, what sadhu means, great sages. And the rascal editors at the BBT still haven't fixed it, even though Prabhupada directly spoke about it. So I'm happy to inform you that whatever rascals we are, we're not that rascal. We fixed it 30 years ago. I was happy to look at this conversation again and find that out. Any questions? Yes. A little louder. Who did the original word for words? Prabhupada. Yeah, this is first canto. Of course, Prabhupada did all the word for word meanings. For a while, he experimented with having other devotees, some of his students, do the word for word meanings separately. So the word for word meanings would be done, and then Prabhupada would come to the translation. But he found that it didn't work. That it seemed to be more trouble than it was worth, that, you know, they wouldn't do it the way that he had in mind, or somehow, for one reason or another, it didn't work, so Prabhupada just never went with that. He found that it was better to, as you go along, do your word-for-word meanings, and then do your translation. So Prabhupada did basically all the word meanings. And this, of course, is first canto. First canto Prabhupada published himself in India before coming to America. And probably you've seen those old reddish volumes that Prabhupada published. So there, if you look at this verse, you'll see, oh, the sages, in the word-for-word meaning, which was Prabhupada's, like, Prabhupada would say, oh, the sages, oh, the king, and so on. So the right way to edit it is you change O-H to capital O, and you strike out the, and you've got it. But if you don't do it right, you change OH to OF, and then you're a rascal. So the rascals got it wrong, but someplace back in 1977 or 78, the rascals fixed it. Yes? Meaning, and there's meaning and literal translation. Will the meaning, you have to keep the meaning. Does that mean the translations will change over time? Let's address the first things first. That yes, translation does mean getting the meaning across. I had this question last night because sometimes devotees read Prabhupada's translations and, you know, the Sanskrit is this long and Prabhupada's translation is this long. And it's got all sorts of stuff that's not there in the word for word. And you say, well, what is this? And the answer is that Prabhupada's giving the meaning. He's unpacking. You know, each verse, each word has unlimited meaning, significance. And so Prabhupada wants us to get the significance of the word. And so he unpacks it and it writes his explanation, essentially, into the translation. We were reading Prahlad Maharaj yesterday. He was saying that a person who's addicted to sense gratification is like a person with five wives. One's pulling this way, one's pulling that way. Come on, enjoy. Guy's getting torn up. So it says, the Sanskrit is very terse. It says something on one side, hearing, on one side, seeing, on one side. And Prabhupada opens it up. He says, on one side, he's seeing different things for sense gratification. On another side, he wants to touch something soft to satisfy his sense of touch. On another, so he's opening it up a little bit more so that we'll understand it. Otherwise, if you just go very literal and very terse, The scholars may say, great, you did a wonderful job. But the people, the reader may not get the idea. So Prabhupada translates for meaning. He doesn't invent fanciful interpretations. He sticks to the literal meaning, but he opens it up and explains it in his translations. When you translate also, sometimes you have to change things. This goes just a little bit more into translation theory, but it's interesting for those who are interested. There's an expression in Spanish. There's an expression in English, between the devil and the deep blue sea. You heard that expression? Between the devil and the deep blue sea. It means between a rock and a hard place. You've heard that expression, right? So suppose you're translating to Spanish. If you translate entre el diablo y el profundo azul mar, which is literally what the English says, a Spanish reader will look at that and say, what in the world does this mean? What in the world does this mean? So what you have to do when you translate into Spanish is you say, entre la espada y la pared, between the sword and the wall, which is a very common, it's like between a rock and a hard place is in English. It's a common expression. And it means exactly the same thing. Two alternatives equally bad. Between the sword, you're pressed and you can't go anywhere. Between the sword and the wall. That's how you say between the devil and the deep blue sea in Spanish. There's another example. Some Bible translators had this problem. Even though their sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. New Testament. Though their sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. So they were translating into an African language in a country that was flat. So it's a tropical country, there are no mountains, and there's no snow. Now what do? So the translators were very intelligent. Though their sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as the meat of a white coconut. So it's not a literal translation, but the meaning is preserved. So now we come to Prabhupada's books. And we like to think these will be the law books for the next 10,000 years. But what happens to language in 10,000 years? Language changes. If you read Shakespeare, you need a little special guidance. Because Shakespeare is what? 500 years old by now, roughly. So it's kind of hard. When Hamlet says, by the rood. What's a rood? Anyone know what a rood is? No, nobody has the slightest idea what a rood is, but it's a big cross that hangs in a prominent place in a building. That's a rood. Where he talks about a pair of reachy kisses. Yeah, reachy. But it's kind of like what the word sounds like, reachy. You know, you're crummy, blah, 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 reachy. But the word is, I'd like to see that word come back. There's a lot of stuff that's reachy these days. It's going to be a good word to revive, but now it's out. Nobody knows what reachy is. And that's Shakespeare. He's a little tough. You need some guidance, one of those little books that explains to you what means what. And then you get to Chaucer. You go back a little further and you get to Chaucer, and that you can read Shakespeare is no longer a qualification, because Chaucer is more difficult still, because the language has changed. The language has changed. So we can't pick up Chaucer and read him. That you can pick up the Daily News or the Times doesn't mean that you can pick up Chaucer and figure out what he's saying. The spellings have changed all over the place. The words have changed. Words have gone out. Words have gone in. Words don't mean the same thing anymore. the same word, but it means something different. In the Bible, what is it? Shall be as meat for you. But meat doesn't mean flesh. It just means food, like sweetmeats. It doesn't mean, you know, some flesh that you poured sugar on. It means something else. So the words change. So if we're going to be 10,000 years with Prabhupada's books, someplace down the line, Prabhupada's books are going to have to be translated into English. Shocking though it may seem. And then the language was changing, you know, over the last few hundred years. Woo, what happens now with the internet and global communication and all of that stuff? Words are moving faster than ever. The number of new words that go into a dictionary and the number of new meanings, you know, even bad means good. Awesome doesn't mean what it used to. Gay. Right? When I grew up, gay meant, you know, happy and festive. You know, we're going to have a gay festival at the manor. Not anymore, we're not. Well, that's what happens to language. It changes. And over centuries, it changes severely. So in the future, yeah, Prabhupada's books are almost certainly going to have to be translated into whatever they speak several hundred years from now. Unless we want them just to be collector's items studied by specialists. But if we want to continue to distribute them on the street and go house to house and put them in everyone's hand, they'll have to be translated into English. Yeah. Any other questions? And that means, by the way, that devotees will have to be trained how to preserve the meaning, how to be faithful to what Prabhupada said, and yet be willing to change the words themselves so that what Prabhupada said is still there. If we come around, you know, 700 years from now and say, well, these are the law books and not a word can be changed, then you'll have dusty volumes or stuff kept in a digital archive someplace or whatever that no one will understand except people who've gone to college and studied the language of the 1900s. But if we want the books to be alive and read, then we'll need people who are willing to change the language, but who are very strict about keeping the meaning. Now, that's not a license to start changing the language prematurely. Say, well, we're going to have to change it in 500 years anyway. Let's go to town now. No. We shouldn't unnecessarily change Prabhupada's language. And even, you know, hundreds of years from now, there will be those who will read the original just as, I can read English, but I'd much rather read Tolstoy in Russian if I had the ability. So there will be those who will want to read Prabhupada's books exactly as they were. But they'll need to be changed. Yes, I interrupted. Who did I interrupt? Yes. Excuse me? There's a petition. Oh, yeah, there's always a petition. What's my view on releasing all the tapes? Well, it's great as a propaganda item, but the business of archiving is not just the business of making everything available. It's important to make everything available, and it should be done as soon as possible. But there's a system to it. What are you making available? Are you making available a splicing of three different lectures that was done by a bhakta in 1975? There are such tapes. Are you making available duplicates? Are you making available, you know, two-thirds of a lecture when three-thirds of it have already been published? What exactly are you making available? Where did it come from? How do we know it's bona fide? So the archive devotees are in the business of, first of all, it's easy, you know, so just publish them all. Some of them are like magnetic flakes almost. You know, these are recorded on 30-year-old magnetic tape where it's fragile stuff and it can deteriorate. So your first priority is not to say, let's play it and record it and get it out there. Your first priority is let's preserve it. So your first priority is let's put this into a digital. First thing is let's, you know, make sure that the tape is stabilized as far as possible. Then let's put it into a digital form so that it won't deteriorate. Digital stays as it is. Then you have the business of cleaning it up. Because the tapes that have not been released, why have they not been released? Because they're the hard ones. Not the politically hard ones. That's not an issue for the archives. They don't look at that and say, whoa, better not let them hear this one. No. Yeah, they publish Rascal Editors, they'll publish, you know, the rest of it also. But they're tough in the sense that they're in bad condition, either physically in bad condition, or when you go to listen to it, they're a mess. I mean, you don't know how bad can be. You've heard of signal to noise ratio. You know, how much signal is there compared to how much noise? And sometimes it's more like a noise to signal ratio. You're getting more noise than actual content. So it's great to say, you know, we'll just release it all. But what is anyone going to make of it? It's not in very good shape. And sometimes terrible. And you can say, well, it's simple. You know, now we have filters and you run it through a filter. I've done it. I had one lecture. Probably you've heard that lecture about, it's on my website, about Apichet Sudaracharo, don't badmouth sadhus. It was recorded in the courtyard, not a courtyard, in the garden in Mayapur, in the Grihastha area, on a windy day with construction going on two sides, with bong, 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 followed by and with kids playing, and then the wind going, let me tell you, first thing I did was run a filter through it. Doesn't work that way. The amount of hand work that you have to do to get a lecture that's in that bad shape into something that people could actually listen to is enormous. There's hours of work, hours and hours to do that. Then there's also that you want to transcribe the tape. Part of the process of releasing it is getting it transcribed so that you know what it is. Because, okay, you could say, well, you could just release it first and transcribe it second. But how do you know what it is unless you've transcribed it? Either you sit there and spend, you know, an hour and a half sorting through it and listening to it, or someone transcribes it and you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, this is the same one as that one. Or, no, this is new. So there's transcription. Then there's identifying it. Where was this spoken? When? There's that. Now, you may not get that information, and that doesn't stop you from releasing it, but this is all part of the archival process. Preserving the material, cleaning up the material, identifying the material, making sure that it's not a duplicate of other material or a combination of other material. This is all part of the archives work. So the devotees at the archives, there are exactly three devotees at the Bhaktivedanta archives. Count them, three. And they're all working full-time. They've got the tapes, they've got images, they've got manuscripts, all sorts of stuff they're working on. And all you have to do is spend your afternoons on the internet, you know, signing petitions and writing to conferences and saying, why aren't they releasing all the tapes? Now, having said all that, they should, you know, we'd be happy to light a fire under them and, you know, get them going, and they're not working, however fast they're working, they should work faster, and we want to push. That's fine. That's great. I'll sign that petition. Everyone should work faster. That's fine. But, you know, they're a conspiracy, and they're hiding everything from us, and they don't want us to know what Prabhupada really said, and so they're keeping it from the Prabhus, and... You know, what you're going to get is not, there are no revelations. I would be very surprised if there are any revelations there. Nothing's being hidden because it's a revelation. You'll find out if you listen to those tapes that you're not this body, that you're spirit soul, that life is meant for devotional service to Krishna, that scientists and Mayavadis are rascals. You'll find out what you find out elsewhere, which isn't to say that, well, it's redundant and so we don't have no interest in publishing it. We're keenly interested in publishing it. We want to get it out. But it's easier to criticize than to do. If somebody's seriously interested in helping get this stuff out there as soon as possible, they need transcribers. If anybody is good at hearing Prabhupada and typing and would like to volunteer, Bhaktivedanta Archives needs transcribers. Volunteer your help. If you can type on the internet, maybe you could type for this. If you have real expertise in audio handling and so on, well, maybe there's a role for you there. If you happen to have any money, Archives is not flush with cash flush. Just, you know, if you'd like to help there, there's work to do. Especially transcribers they need. If you have skills with, librarian skills. Oh, if you're a librarian, come see me after the end of the class. Or if you have photo skills, there's lots to do there. And if you're really good in programming, we have a big, big project. But that's another story altogether. But the summary is that I'm not very impressed with petitions on websites that give the impression that there's some sort of terrible injustice being perpetrated on the devotees by the Bhaktivedanta archives. Really, that's rot, in a word. It ain't so. Plus, they're up to date on, you know, the latest formats for archival work. I mean, how many of us know what an archive really does? It's really easy to say, well, an archive, you know, you just keep it and you keep it in good temperature control conditions, and that's archiving. Archiving is a science. It's not just keeping. It's the whole science of keeping, recording, knowing where things came from. How do you know that this came, you know, where did it come from? Whose hands was it in first? Because later people, you know, if they don't like the tape, they'll say, well, it was probably changed by Tamal Krishna Maharaj or Jayadwaita Swami. You know, so it's important to have what they call the provenance of your material, who had it before that, to, as far as you can. And this is all part of archiving. It doesn't mean you always get all these things, and if you don't get it, you put it in the trash can. No. But this is all part of archival science. Preserving, making copies, keeping backups, so that if there's, you know, like Lester, if that happens in in the archives. It's not that everything is lost forever. There's the business of keeping backups in several places. And there's the very important business of distributing as many copies as possible to the devotees and to others interested. Very much part of the archives mission. So it's easy to criticize. It takes 2 seconds to sign a petition. But to actually understand the service that these devotees are doing and appreciate it takes a different kind of consciousness. Okay. Shall we stop here? Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, I should mention something about the archives while I'm thinking about it. They are planning an update for the Bhaktivedanta Veda base. There is new stuff. There are new letters that have been gathered. There's new, quite a bit of new stuff that the archives acquired. I met with them about a month back. And so they're planning to do an incremental update. It's not a software update, which would cost a lot of money and be problematic, but just more stuff in there. So our target for that is Christmas time, middle of December. We hope to have that out to you. So that's a current project at the Bhaktivedanta Archives. Okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.